All right, let's get back to this quarterback conversation. Where let's bring in Stefan. Hey, Stefan.
Hi, Stefan.
How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. So I've been listening all morning. Just hear me out on this. Okay. I think that the best way that we fans are going to have, we're just gonna have to realize that there's no easy fix to this. As much as we may not want it to end like this, Deshaun Watson, when he comes back next year, is going to more than likely be the quarterback. Jameis Winston, I honestly see him signing with another team in the offseason if he continues to play good. And let's say somebody is willing to offer Cleveland a trade for DTR, the only person you have then is Deshaun Watson. So I think it's more so the conversation we need to have is, how do we make Deshaun Watson work? What is it that we can kind of, you know, pull from his ability to get him going offensively? That's really what I see. I don't really see an easy fix for this, because you can't get rid of him. There's too much money on the contract. I know Jimmy's not about to do that. I know he's not.
I can't imagine getting rid of him either.
I can't either.
Because of the money, Stefan. I think you're right. Can you send him home and figure out a way out of this without killing yourselves? That's the question the Browns have to deal with.
You're not going to put him on the bench. Let's be honest about that now. Even if you brought him to training camp with a quarterback competition between him and Jameis, you got 70 million reasons why he should be the starter come game one. So I don't see it.
So can you see a scenario where he is on the roster but just not there? Like, they'll be like, hey, man, if he's done this once before, you're going to be inactive every week, and you don't need to come to the stadium, and you don't need to come to Berea. We're just going to pay you.
I don't see Jimmy being that type of person to have to make that declaration that I made a bad financial business decision like that. I honestly think that Jimmy is willing to say, hey, let's give him a different play caller. Let's give him a healthy offensive line. Let's give him his starting running back. And then if none of that works, then we'll have to figure out from there. That's where I see it. I mean, because when season starts, he didn't have two offensive linemen. There's some things that you could say was lacking, but plus he's coming back from a shoulder, injury he had as well. But I just, like I said, I don't see Jimmy making that call saying you can just stay at home and we're gonna pay you. I don't see that happening.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Stefan. Appreciate it. Good phone call. Let's go to Will, who's in either Olmsted Falls or North Olmsted. Where are you, Will? What's going on? I'm not getting good clicks today. No, my mouse is a mess. Hi, Will. How are you?
I'm doing good. The other guy said, I've been listening all morning. And what does Deshaun Watson thing? I agree that I don't think that the people in Cleveland are giving up on his qualities and what he can do. I think they've given up with more of the absentee and not performing and the lifestyle that he has. And I think they're just tired of it, but once again, we need him to pull us in through the next season. And, I just don't think that's fair to him, because he is a good player, but because of his antics, I think Cleveland has just had enough of it.
All right, well, thank you. I don't know, Jeff, we've spent so much time talking about Deshaun. When we talk about him, I'm strictly on the football part of it. And so you can talk about, I understand that's, there's a lot of people that
aren't.
That's
why he's on the roster.
And I don't,
football.
Right. And so to me, it's on-field performance. And it's trying to evaluate if his game is where it's at because he's sat out. Is it where he's at because the offensive line struggled? Is it because he can't get in sync with the wide receivers? Is it a good running back? Is it because of the poach? Is it? I mean, we're looking and trying to figure out all the other factors, because we know what he was like at one point. And at one point, we would have been like, wow, yeah, this is great. But at that point, this is true, the off-the-field stuff is like, he wouldn't have been available, right? He would have been in Houston. He never would have left if they didn't have issues going on down there. You think? If I'm wrong.
Contractual things, too.
Maybe. I just, it's interesting to watch and see how this thing all plays out and just, you know, kind of get your read on it and your feel for it. Real quick, I'm going to take a call. Lewis Shaker, go ahead. How are you, man?
Pretty good, man. I mean, I saw the tear, man. I saw it through a sock, man. If he had a complete rupture, you know, from his Achilles. gastroc and his Achilles, his calcaneus, he's not coming back from that, man. Mobility was his thing. He is not Nick Chubb. Mobility was his thing, and his mobility is not going to be 100% when he get back. It's probably going to never be 100% when he get back. And he was already scared to sit in the pocket from the beginning. And don't get me wrong, I'm a Deshaun Watson fan. I was in this corner, but I saw that. I'm like, oh, he's done. And me being a physical therapist assistant, I'm like, he's done. His career is over.
Lewis, how tough is it to come back from that if you're a younger person like Deshaun, as opposed to, say, Aaron Rodgers, who's 40?
I can't tell you because everybody heals different. Everybody heals differently. Who knows?
Just the stuff I've read, it said 9 months to return back to high impact. And I'm assuming that's the average, right? So that's just what I just read on Achilles rupture.
I mean, like I said, you guys saw it. I give him an extra 3, man. Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
All right. I cringed when I saw it. I was like, oh, my gosh.
We got you.
I'm like, the season's over.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it. You hear me on 92.3 The Fan every game day. Outstanding call this weekend, especially because it was a win and it was a lot of fun. He is Andrew Siciliano, and right now he's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. And come on, this thing hates me. This mouse hates me today. How are you, my friend? I tried to set this good vibe. I tried to set the good vibe,
and then technology the computer let him down,
hates
Andrew.
Me. Yes,
technology let him down.
You're the chairman of the board, the chief of affection. I appreciate it right there.
It's all about you, my friend. All about you. Oh, man. First of all, and I'm not just saying this because we're friends, but great job on Sunday. I mean, it was it was an emotional heartstring tug between the game and with Jim Donovan and with Jim's passing, and just really nice job, because those aren't easy games to do when you've got a heavy heart, my friend.
I'm going to say thank you. Even saying thank you feels a bit off, though, because, we all wish we didn't have to. Obviously, be in that situation, and we wish Jim were still here. Clearly, that goes without saying. I honestly, guys, still haven't really processed the entire thing. I haven't even watched the whole call back. But your words mean a lot. I appreciate it. We, Nathan, everybody, were just trying to hit the right tone, and any emotions that came out were real and genuine and heartfelt. It was a lot.
Yeah, and by the way, we didn't bring that up this morning, but last night during the World Series, what Scott Efros from Twinsburg, stand up to cancer.
How amazing was that?
That was really, I saw that this morning because I didn't catch it during the game. And then I was like, oh, that was awesome that, when they have that, everyone holds a sign up for them, stand up to cancer, and he honored Jim Donovan last night during the World Series. So I just, it was
cool.
Amazing.
I had missed it too. I was at a dinner, didn't see the pregame, and I think I actually turned the game on right when Volpe was hitting a homer. And by the way, other than the Scott Wells, was it Scott Wells, Austin Wells, whatever the catcher's name is, every other home run last night in that building was a cheap Yankee Stadium home run, but I digress. I was just sitting here with Gibby and Nathan and everything, and Gibby goes, hey, did you see that? I said, no, what? And he showed me the picture. I'm like, holy bleep, that was awesome.
Very cool.
That was very cool. Let's talk quarterback, shall we?
Sure.
What did Jameis do that you liked? Because obviously it was pretty effective.
Got the ball out quickly, pressed the ball downfield. And those are the two things I think that were lacking. Not to say Deshaun never got the ball out quickly. I mean, there were plenty of quick slants and balls to the flat. I mean, we saw that part of his game and saw it a lot. But Jameis got the ball out quickly and, through the outs and through the deep overs and through the curl. Jameis pushed the ball downfield, as we have seen in this offense in years past, whether it be Baker, whether it even be Jacoby Brissett, or whether certainly it be Joe Flacco last year. That's what the offense has looked like in years past, and Jameis got it back to that.
We're sitting here this morning trying to kick around if this is hopefully this is the norm moving forward. And I think part of it is teams have to plan to play against Nick Chubb because Nick looked like he had that burst back on Sunday too. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you now have some cohesion a little bit better, a little bit stronger, and getting better every week on that offensive line.
Yeah, I think the line obviously plays a factor in it. I think Ken and Lima said it well this morning. Like, every part of the offense looked better. It's not just Jameis. The line blocked better. Everyone ran better. Guys were coming out of breaks expecting the football, caught the ball better. All of it looked better. The key is doing it again. And I'm not trying to be the negative Nancy here. It's great. Go do it again. You know, can you get a game in which, A, you don't throw the ball to the other team, and B, when you do, they don't catch it? That's what happened against the Ravens, right? I mean, they didn't catch it. Give the Chargers a chance to catch it this week. At Bonker's stat we just pulled up, too, the Browns haven't had a quarterback throw for 300 in consecutive games without a pick. That's the key one. 300 yards, no picks in consecutive games. You guys want to try to get the answer? When was the last time that happened?
I'm going to go Brian Sipe.
Not 300 yards. Not 1980 MVP Brian Sipe. No, good answer.
Thanks.
It was actually 2015 Josh McCown when he went on that heater earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It's been that long. And by the way, those are hard things to do. It's not necessarily the passing league it used to be even last year. So, I mean, if Jameis went 303 scores with no picks, 303 and no picks, he'd be the first quarterback to do that in the league in back-to-back weeks since Tua did it 2 years ago. Wow. So, you know, the key, though, is the no picks.
Andrew, one thing I thought was really interesting, when the Browns traded for Elijah Moore, you know, I'm thinking, okay, can he be that guy he was kind of his rookie year with the New York Jets, that the Jets soured
on? You saw that.
And in 4 years with Jerry Jeudy in Denver, you thought, can Jerry Jeudy show some glimpses? And he showed those glimpses. And you brought in Cedric Tillman thinking he could be your big target down the field. Every one of those guys did what it was you brought them here to do with Jameis throwing that ball downfield. And to me, that might have been the most vital thing of all, because you didn't just solve a quarterback situation. At least for one game, you solved a wide receiver situation.
Exactly. Everyone kind of looked like the guy you hoped they would be when you sat there during the summer and got ready for the Greenbrier and said, all right, what does our roster look like? Well, they did the jobs that you had hoped. All of it came together in one game. And again, the key is to do it again, right? The key, and look, this week they are facing the number one scoring defense in the NFL. The Chargers are giving up the fewest points per game in the NFL, period. So they've allowed, I think, one 100-yard receiver all year. I think they've only allowed like three rushing touchdowns all year, something like that. So if they could do that against the Chargers, then yeah, you got something, period. This team's allowed only 20 points once. That was in their loss week 3 at Pittsburgh. They were 2-0. They went into Pittsburgh and lost to the Steelers 20-10. So the Ravens have a tradition of good defense. And they had the number one run defense coming in, but their pass defense was a mess, and they were down top their top two corners, and Marcus Williams was benched. This is a much different challenge this week. This is a really good and a talented and a well-coached team all around, but especially defensively. So they are absolutely going up in weight class with the opposition this week.
Maybe
if Jameis can do that again, and the numbers look the same, then you know what? Party time over the bye.
There you go. And maybe they'll be sleepy after the long flight. Maybe they'll serve turkey on the plane. And they'll all have the trip. And they'll be like, oh, we got to wake up and play the game.
Andrew, I deal with this every day.
Every day he deals with it.
Are you making L-tryptophan jokes
here?
Yeah,
a little bit.
Randall L-tryptophan?
Yeah, a little bit.
Wow.
I'm trying to. We were talking about this today, too. Do you think that the league itself might be kind of might lean back towards more traditional quarterbacks that stay in the pocket? Or I mean, I know we're feeling a little bit of good vibe from Sunday, but you know, the RPO generation. I don't know. Could we twist back to more traditional? I'm going to stand in the pocket quarterback.
Maybe.
Okay.
But you know, when you have a quarterback who has the threat of the run, it changes the numbers, it changes the math, and it's that much more difficult to defend. The most dangerous quarterback is a guy like Lamar, who has kind of morphed into a traditional stand in the pocket quarterback who still has the ability to run and kill you, like the play with Asper, where, by the way, Miles was held badly by Ronnie Stanley. That could have been a safety, but he's standing in the end zone. The middle of the field is wide open. Okay, I'll go for 30. But he tried to stay back there for a while. I mean, there's a good 4 or 5 seconds on that drop in the end zone, around the one, around the two. No one opened downfield. Great coverage. He decided to run. So whether or not you want an RPO-based system, that's on your coaching. But to have the ability to be a pocket passer and kill you with your legs, those are the difference makers.
Andrew Siciliano joining us, play-by-play for the Browns coming up on Sunday against the Los Angeles Chargers. Does one win change a philosophy at the trade deadline?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer, but it is certainly something to ponder. If they had lost that game, if it looked bad, I mean, would we be sitting here going, well, what could you get for Za'Darius Smith? You probably are still thinking that, mm-hmm. right? Or Shelby Harris, right? The phone may still ring, but how do you respond when the phone rings? All the GMs talk. There are going to be a million conversations that aren't real trade talks, but more like, hey, would you give up that guy? Or, what about that guy? You know, teams, GMs do that all the time. Does one win change your philosophy? I don't know. I really don't. I guess it depends on what the offer is. Everyone's got a price, right? Might you give up one of the aforementioned guys there or somebody else this week for a far higher pick than you would have if you had lost? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens, Andrew. It's all kind of could go a number of different ways.
Think about it real quick. If you had lost and someone called for one of those two guys and flipped you a low round pick, maybe you take it because at that point you go, all right, we're going nowhere. We'll get a return.
Right.
But this week, that same player probably costs the other team a lot more, and you are far less willing to give that player up. And you have to be blown away because you got a little momentum. You got a little wind in your sails.
So we were kicking this around too. DeJuan Jones, like last week, I was like, okay, feels good. Like I thought he played a good game. Then we were talking about the PFF numbers. The PFF numbers weren't real good. What did you see? And what did we learn towards the future about DeJuan Jones?
I thought he played a good game, and it's something to build on. And I'd like to see him out there again. Yeah, did he in the red zone whiff on a block against Adafe Owe, and Nick Chubb had to bounce it outside, and Owe totally blew that play up, and maybe can you get around left end and get into the end zone? Maybe. I don't know. He probably, look, PFF grades are very subjective. Mm-hmm. You have former O-line coaches who are working there as analysts and looking at film, you know, in their home offices at 3 in the morning, and I'm not in any way trashing PFF, but O-line play grades and a lot of those grades are... No, I'm not. I'm not. I love them. I use them all the time. I truly do. But some of those grades are subjective, right?
Right.
O-line grades might be a little bit more dead on than some of the other grades. He whiffed on that one block, certainly. But I thought he played well, and I absolutely think it's something to build on. For what it's worth, by the way, Justin Herbert is PFF's highest graded player for Week 8.
And there you have it.
Wow.
Thank you.
There you have it.
Andrew Siciliano for PFF. What do you think? No? I'm trying to get you another gig.
Every day, Andrew, PFF this is what password. I deal with. Every day.
Hey,
gave me a PFF premium password. I use it all the time. I love PFF.
Just wait till
they're in Cincinnati.
Maybe PFF is going to start doing play-by-play grades. What do you think?
I do not want to hear my grade. Believe me, there are enough things. Hey, I listened back to the game. When I listen back to the game, alone in the dark with a bottle of brown liquor. So that's generally the way I do things. Like, if I, like, turn on the game, like, from NBC or the Rant. Like, I do a TV game. Like, I watch by myself in the dark.
I'll leave it at that. And I'll look forward to doing
Fact.
We'll look forward to Fact or Fiction this week during the pregame.
Thank you, buddy.
Show. Thank you, Andrew.
You got it. See you guys.
All right. Andrew Siciliano. He rocks. He's on the Browns Radio Network. Of course, you hear him doing play-by-play every Sunday now. He's a super friend of the show. He's John Ireland. He's the play-by-play guy for the Lakers. And now he is here for the family reunion, the James family reunion, because I'm sure there'll be some folks in from Summit County to watch tonight's game. John, sorry we've had to put you through all that, all the boredom of hearing.
Good morning, boys.
Good morning.
It's almost over with the morning, but you will never get anybody from Los Angeles that would be upset to hear that song.
Okay.
matter of fact, I don't know if you guys noticed, but when Freddie Freeman hit the grand slam in game one of the World Series, they rolled that song before he got to second base. That is a tradition in Los Angeles. When the Dodgers win and the Lakers win, they play I Love LA, and Randy Newman's the greatest. So I actually thank you for playing that. By the way, Jeff, we've been friends for 40 years, and I've been coming to Cleveland, and it's never not been in the 40s.
I know.
It's 74 degrees in Cleveland. The Cavs are undefeated. The Browns are beating the Ravens. The Guardians are in the playoffs. Now I get it. It took me this long
to see
why you love this place so much.
See?
I totally get it all in one day.
I texted John and I said, welcome to another 70-degree day in Cleveland. This is what happens when you show up in October and not February.
Amen. Amen. We'll take it.
As long as we don't
play... How are you, boys?
Good. As long as we don't play Randy Newman's Burning River song, right, from Major League. That would depress all of us.
Wow.
I actually thought about finding Major League last night and watching it as I was working on the game today, just because it's so nice here. I mean, it's like, this is the nicest day, Jeff, I've ever been in Cleveland. And I don't even know what second place is.
I don't think you're ever here this early. That's
no,
why.
You're never here. January, yeah. February. I picked him up downtown, and we drove south on 77, and it was a blizzard. And coming back, I think I've never seen John look that way in my life. He was quite terrified.
Yeah, Jeff's going to take you surfing later today. I don't know if you know that or not. Yeah,
Andy, I was wondering why the hell Jeff would ever drive in that slop. I would have been on a ditch in the side of the road.
Well, you should see the van he was driving until he just retired it with 160 million miles on it. Right, Jeff?
Yeah, yes, something like that.
Jeff is a car connoisseur.
Oh, we know.
I know he hangs on to him forever.
Yeah, that's true.
The truth.
This is true. All right, we don't want to. We do want to talk a little basketball. How's the James family reunion going on? Is that fun or what?
What's weird about it, Andy, is that I actually think it's a good story. LeBron is like happy as he's ever been. He's super engaged on media day. He was like a stand-up comedian. I think he genuinely enjoys this opportunity. But boy, people outside of our world just hate it. Just hate that story. It's like I was listening to a Bill Maher podcast, and he was railing on the Lakers. Different people come on all the time, and kind of I don't understand where the hatred's coming from. He was the 55th pick in the draft. Do you know how often the 55th pick even ends up making a team? So it's an experiment, but it's kind of a fun one for us. And I don't know why, but there's a lot of hatred around the outside.
I don't think there'll be hatred tonight. Yeah, I don't think you're going to. I think it'll be welcomed. You might even feel at home tonight. I can't imagine Cavs fans are going to be upset with it.
Why would Cavs fans boo a guy other than LeBron when he came back with Miami?
Yeah, we forgot about that.
Who was born in Akron, Ohio.
That's right.
Steph Curry. Forgot.
Oh, wrong guy.
John.
Yeah.
How much does. We all know Bronny needs to spend time in the G League. Well, what does he need to do to become an NBA player? Because as you just said, it's a question, and we all understand the story, and it's heartwarming. And, you know, if anybody deserves his kid to be on a roster for a while, it's LeBron. But what does he have to do to become an NBA player?
He's got to get better offensively, Jeff. Defensively, he's pretty much there. He's athletic. He's not as big as LeBron. LeBron is a legit 6'7". Bronny's more like 6'1", 6'2". But he's athletic. He's fast. You can put him on other guards, and he can cover them coast to coast. So defensively, he's there. Offensively, he's not a great shooter, so his shot needs to get better. He's good at attacking the rim. And people forget, Jeff, he just turned 20. He turned 20 earlier this month. So he would be a sophomore at USC. And his USC thing got hijacked by that heart arrhythmia,
right?
By, mm-hmm. you know, when his heart stopped. And so he didn't really even get a full college experience. And so people say, well, the only reason he's on the team is because his last name is James. To which I say, duh, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I mean, I think if Shohei Ohtani had a kid, there would be teams that would draft him right now at age one. You're taking a calculated risk that the son of maybe the greatest guy to ever play athletically in the NBA could turn into something. And I got to tell you guys, they like him. He's a good kid. He's humble. The team likes him. LeBron gives him a lot of crap. They kind of have some fun with him, being that he's one of our two rookies. And to people that are close to the story, we're all rooting for Bronny. I know that there seems to be this social dynamic where some people aren't, but he seems to be above it all. He seems to be enjoying it. He's working really hard. Redick loves him. Our coach loves him. And so he's going to have a chance to develop over the next 2 to 3 years.
I did like nice. The clip that came out after that first game, because you saw LeBron the dad for a second there. And I don't think it was scripted. I don't think it was anything LeBron had thought about before he said it, but he was just telling him about the pace of the game. I'm trying to remember the exact words that he used. And it was just that kind of that moment where, like, a father would tell his son, hey, you're going out there for the first time in the big time, and this is what it's going to be, and just remember this. And I actually thought that was a great moment to be able to see that and watch that. I don't think LeBron cared that there was a microphone near him on that, or forgot about the microphone when you saw that father son moment that first time. And I was like, this is pretty cool.
Well, and Andy, the Griffeys were in the front row. Ken Griffey Sr. and Ken Griffey Jr. in the front row. They came to see it. So it was a feel-good story. Now, we live in a cynical world, and we live in a world of social media, so a lot of people attacked it. But I can tell you that inside the Lakers tent, we're all kind of in that tent. I'm including fans and staff and broadcasters and everybody that kind of follows all things Lakers. Everybody's kind of rooting for this kid because they realize, and you know, guys, you can do a deep dive on this. We don't have to go really into it, but he could have died. A year ago, that kid could have died.
Absolutely. They brought him back to life, John.
Right. And if not for, and LeBron talks openly about this, and so does Savannah, his wife, if it not for those first responders, that story could have had a really bad ending. And the fact that, and I think, guys, this is just my opinion, they've never told me this, but I think that accelerated everything. When they had that kind of life and death moment, they said, you know, he probably could have stayed in school and had a more college experience, but the coach left. Andy Enfield, his coach, left and went to SMU. They brought in a new guy. All of his friends on the team left. And because he could, because his last name was James, he entered the draft, and they fast-tracked this because I think they said, you're not guaranteed tomorrow. We don't know how long LeBron's going to play. We don't know how long Bronny's going to be healthy. Let's go for this. And so that's what we're watching, and like I said, most people that love the Lakers are rooting for it to succeed.
John Ireland joining us. He is the play-by-play man of the Los Angeles Lakers, and the Lakers playing the Cavs tonight here in Cleveland. John, I don't know in any sport if I've ever seen a guy get to the age of 40, play as well as LeBron's playing without slipping really at any point in his career. How's he still doing this?
Jeff, the reason you haven't seen it is because it's never happened. I mean, nothing even close. Like, I'll give you some perspective. Before, last year was year 21 for LeBron. And, of course, Andy, you and Jeff saw all the early years, and then he came back and won that title with you guys. So mm-hmm. you guys have a unique seat and perspective on watching this. Vince Carter, in year 21, averaged more points a game than any player ever before him, and he averaged 8 points a game. LeBron averaged 25. LeBron's statistics last year, in year 21, were very similar to all the years you watched him play in Cleveland.
Absolutely.
There has literally been no drop-off. In a lot of ways, he's added elements to his game, Jeff. His three-point shot is better. Last year, his three-point shooting percentage was the highest of his career. in year 21. I mean, I got to describe it every night, guys, and I run out of adjectives to describe what this guy's doing. He had a game the other night. We were down 22, and he basically came out in the fourth quarter, took over the game. Him and Anthony Davis, basically, we had a 44-point fourth quarter. Those guys had 30 of it. And when LeBron's not scoring, he's setting up other people. Jeff, I try not to take it for granted, because the question you asked is the right one. Have we ever seen this, and will we ever see it again? And I'm not sure we will.
And Johnny's playing heavy minutes, too.
That's him. I mean, you guys know him. He does not want to come out.
No.
And the one thing about – I was thinking about this. Tell me what you guys think about this.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight we're watching two teams that were both good last year. They both made the playoffs last year. The Cavs had that one month, I think, where they had one loss in an entire month. Yet the Lakers moved on from Darvin Ham. The Cavs moved on from J.B. Bickerstaff. And it appears, I know we've only played four games, but it appears both teams are better. And neither team changed the roster. You know, the rosters are pretty much the same as they were last year for both the Cavs and the Lakers. And between the two of them, they're 7-1. So this is kind of a crazy lab experiment on how important a coach is. All we did was bring in J.J. Redick and a new staff. All you guys did was bring in Kenny Atkinson and a new staff,
yeah.
And both teams are better. So I think this is a kind of an example of a coach can make a big difference, and you're looking at two teams where that's the case tonight.
It definitely feels that way. John, as always, we appreciate your time. You're
thanks,
the best,
buddy.
And you're the only guy I really know in L.A. right now, so... thanks for being my friend.
Well, Andy, like Jeff, you always have a place to stay if you want to come to L.A., but I don't know if it'll be as nice of a day as it is today in Cleveland. I can't guarantee you that.
We brought you some L.A. weather.
I'm that it's nice today.
I might go on vacation here next year. It's unbelievable.
Now we're talking.
I'm going to go to the pool, except that I don't know if we even have a pool at this hotel. But if we do, I'm going to find it.
It's indoors. You'll find it.
Okay.
Goodbye, John.
Thanks, buddy. See you later.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. John Ireland, voice of the Lakers, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.